Everybody.
But this Friday, the train's going to be running back to Henderson. They've got the road, railroad connected.
You need this, you need this.
It's been the schedule disconnected.
First time I use that. Thank you. So, good morning, everybody. Welcome. I'd like to call this meeting to order, and let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so I understand, Michelle, you're going to administer the oath of office.
I, and say your name.
Warren Harhey.
Do solemnly, yes, please, right hand. Repeat after me, do solemnly swear.
I'm sorry.
Do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Protect and defend.
Protect and defend.
The Constitution and government.
The Constitution and government.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
And the Constitution and government.
And the Constitution and government.
Of the State of Nevada.
Of the State of Nevada.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Whether domestic or foreign.
Whether domestic or foreign.
And that I will bear true faith.
And I will bear true faith.
Allegiance and loyalty.
And loyalty.
To the same.
To the same.
Any ordinance.
Any ordinance.
Resolution.
Resolution.
Or any law.
Or any law.
Of any state.
Of any state.
Notwithstanding.
Notwithstanding.
And that I.
And that I.
Will well.
Will well.
And faithfully perform.
Will faithfully perform.
All the duties.
All the duties.
Of a member.
Of a member.
Of the Southern Nevada District.
Of the Southern Nevada District.
Public Health Advisory Board.
Public Health Advisory Board.
On which.
On which.
I am about to enter.
About to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome. Okay, so now we have a period devoted to comments from the general public regarding any matter that's appearing on the agenda. Do we have anyone here that wishes to express comment?
Mr. Chairman, if I may make a statement.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not on the agenda, though. So is that okay?
Yeah, you're part of the
okay,
public.
All right. In February, my daughter was hospitalized with pneumonia, and it was pretty bad. Her oxygen levels dropped to 50, 51. And she was in there for, I want to say, 6-7 days. This was at the Summerlin Pediatrics ICU, and they took great care of my daughter. And I was there, and I watched them perform tirelessly to get her back to where she needed to be. And I wanted to just go on the record and let them know how grateful I am for getting my daughter back to where she is right now. It was very scary. So I just wanted to give them kudos on how well they took care of my daughter. Not only my daughter, but all of the other patients that was in the pediatric ICU. So, thank you.
Has everyone had an opportunity to look at the April at the agenda, today's agenda?
Move to adopt.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Okay, so let's move on to the consent agenda. Has everyone had an opportunity to look at the minutes from our January 23rd meeting?
Yep. I'll move to adopt the minutes of the January meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, can you confirm that there's no opposed?
Is anyone opposed to the adoption of the minutes from the January 23rd meeting? There's no one opposed. Okay, so we want to have a review and discuss status of our accreditations. Which I I guess Andy has a presentation for that.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Andy Glass. I'm the Director of Administration, sitting in for Emily Elzastawe, who is currently at a educational program out of town. So I've been asked to fill in and just give a brief update on where we're at with accreditation. All of the documents have been submitted to the FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, actually in January. We have actually been assigned our team that is going to be doing the site visit. We have three members who are coming from different parts of the country. We have not yet heard exactly who or what day and time period we're going to be having the accreditation site visit. We expect to hear that. It's already been 3 months since the documents were submitted, and last month the documents were recognized as being complete. So hopefully within the very near future we're going to be hearing from the accreditation board on exactly when our site visit will be. And what I wanted to do was to make sure that you are aware of what the process is that each of us is going to be going through. And when I say us, because that includes you, the advisory board has been a vital part of keeping abreast of what's going on with accreditation throughout the district over the course of the past, actually, 2 years or so. And we're confident that the accreditation board site visitors are going to want to talk to various members of both the advisory board as well as the full board of the district. So what I thought I'd do is run through a quick scenario of what accreditation looks like. The site visit we know is going to be conducted by three individuals who are specifically trained in various areas of expertise within public health. We expect those site visitors to be on site for 2 to 3 days. And again, until we know exactly when that visit is going to be, we're not going to know how long they're going to be here. There are several things that the site visitors will be doing. Number one is reviewing all of the documents. In fact, that's what they're doing during this interim period, is reviewing all of the documents that have been submitted. There have been well over 150 documents that we've had to submit, and the site visitors go through the detail of what's in those documents, looking at, number one, whether they actually fulfill the requirements of the accreditation board, and number two, how the documents tie together and how well we are making a consistent and cohesive program throughout the entire district. When the individuals come, the site visitors will be asking questions regarding conformity of documents, as I said, to standards and measures. And then, in addition, when they're here, we'll actually be going into discussion about many of those documents. They won't ask about each and every one, but they will certainly be interested in primary documents. As we've said before, quality and performance management, which you're going to hear about in a few minutes from Jim Ostie, are going to be two of the key areas that the site visitors are going to be interested in. The site visitors will meet with the accreditation coordinator as well as the domain teams that have been created throughout the district. There are actually 12 domains, so we have 12 different teams of individuals who have been responsible for gathering the information and documentation that has been put together and then ensuring that those documents meet the requirements of accreditation. The site visitors will be meeting with most of those teams. Again, we're not exactly sure if they're going to meet with all of the teams, but they will meet with most of those teams, asking and having an interactive conversation with those team members about what it is that we do here, how those particular documents meet the accreditation standards, and in turn, try to gain information about what we feel can be done to improve the accreditation process and the documentation and the processes that we're using. The advisory board, as well as the Board of Health, will be provided information on all of the documents that have been put together, but we felt that it was just a little bit premature at this point to give you the documentation that we've submitted, simply because there's a wealth of it, and we're not exactly sure what direction the site visit team will be going with that. At the termination of the site visit, the site visitors are going to talk to us about how they feel that our documentation met the accreditation standards, point out areas of what they call excellence, areas of excellence that they feel that we've really gone above and beyond and demonstrated superior documentation within a particular area, as well as superior programs that we have at the district, as well as provide opportunities for improvement. After the site visit, the accreditation committee of the FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, will review the site visit reports as well as the internal document review that's gone on, and make a decision on whether the district should be accredited or accredited with recommendations. If the district is not initially accredited, they will suggest that we put together a work plan to meet the specific areas that have not been made, and that action plan usually has to be completed within 60 to 90 days. They give you a very short time frame for doing that, unless it's something that's a long term, but generally speaking, they want to see results in a very short turnaround. If we do not submit an action plan, we actually could end up being not accredited. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Actually, yes. I do have one. So, will any members of the advisory board need to meet with these folks, or you don't know, or you won't know until closer to the visit?
Correct. And what we'll do is once the team has gotten together after reviewing the documents, the site visit team I'm talking about, they'll let us know who they'd like to meet with and when during the course of the visit they'd like to meet. And until the actual visit dates are set up, they're really not going to give us anything.
But when you get the dates, I hope you tell us so we can get it on our calendars. Even if they don't want to meet with us, at least we'll have it blocked off.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yes. Very definitely.
Do you have an estimate of what month that might be?
Well, they said 3 to 6 months from the time of submission. We actually submitted, it was actually January 31st, if I remember correctly. So we're in that three-month window right now. So over the course of the next 3 months is when we expect to, when you'd normally see a site visit.
And the talking points will be provided to all of us, because I have a tendency to tell the truth in an unfiltered way. So I just want to make sure that...
Well, that's really good. And, you know, in all honesty, that's what the site visitors are looking for, is where the district has gone with accreditation, what we've been doing with accreditation, what you know about the programs that are occurring at the district, as well as the needs of the community, which is one of the reasons that you're here, is because your representatives of the community have been asked by the Board of Health members to represent the community. So we expect that. Thank you.
Thank you. So,
good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the advisory board.
Morning, Doug.
For the record, my name is James Austey, and I am the Quality and Performance Improvement Coordinator for the Health District. I'd like to give you an overview of what that quality and performance improvement really means.
Can I just interrupt you just for a second? Mr. Chair, we know that James is coming up, but we need to, for the record, make sure that it's clear.
Okay.
And just read.
So next is a review And we're going to review and discuss the status of the quality improvement management. And James Osti is going to do the presentation.
Thank you. I hate to be a stickler, but I just like a clean record.
So just so you know, Annette, this is the first meeting I've chaired, so...
No, we're good. We're...
So, I mean, so I appreciate any guidance that you can give us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
First of all, it's important to understand what the definition of performance improvement really means to an organization. And public health performance improvement is a positive change, is it, in public health capacity, processes, or outcomes using clear and aligned planning, monitoring, and improvement activities. This information is derived from NACHO, which is the National Association of City and County Health Officials. And the information that I'll be providing you today is an overview of how performance improvement works in a public health department. NACHO describes 8 component parts to a performance improvement system. Those component parts are performance management, quality improvement, community health assessment and improvement planning, workforce assessment and development planning, strategic planning, pursuit and maintenance of public health accreditation, regular agency assessment against national standards, change management, and adaptive leadership. You'll notice that accreditation is woven directly into the performance improvement standards that we have to meet. When Andy was talking about accreditation and our site visit, there are a number of domains that performance improvement actively interacts with, including domain 8 with workforce assessment and planning, domain 9, which is quality improvement and performance improvement, and all of the others in a less direct fashion. You can see here the elements are slightly rearranged. Up on the right-hand corner, the community health assessment, community health improvement plan, and the strategic plan have been organized as a single entity because they are sequential. And performance of those three work together to provide information first, data, secondly, to create priorities for the community, and then third, to integrate the strategic plan of the district into those priorities. So it's a three-step process. We're going to be calling those the CCS of the organization. Down at the bottom, you see health equity. And health equity is a term that needs to be defined by the organization. We have done some health equity activities. Right now, we are starting a quality improvement project for health equity of the district and how it interacts with the community. So I'm pleased to say that these component parts start interacting with each other. Excuse me, sorry. How do they interact with each other? One example is quality improvement, which is the effort to actually improve systems of the organization so that we function better, that we are more efficient, that we do a better job with the resources that we have. They, in the quality improvement sector, recommend performance management measures to the performance management sector of the organization. In a very small organization, in a small public health environment, this might be just one or two persons, But in a large organization like ourselves, it requires teams. So there would be a quality improvement team and a performance management team that would be talking to each other. The performance management team would take those recommendations from the quality improvement team and turn around and provide data back to the quality improvement team so that the quality improvement team can measure how well we are performing. This feedback loop is important not only in quality improvement and performance management, but it's important across the spectrum. Now, this next slide gets a little bit busy, but it's really saying the same thing, that each component part of the organization is looking at giving feedback to other component parts, and then those component parts in turn will be doing the same thing. This reflects one of the major ways that we do quality improvement in an organization. It's called the PDSA, or Plan, Do, Study, Act. And it's the adopted quality improvement method for all public health organizations, and it's the standard that will be measured by when our site visitors come in. They will be very attuned to how we are doing these activities, and they will be looking for this type of interaction between the various component parts of our system. As an example, with workforce development, which is domain 8 of the accreditation standards, we'll be coordinating training with the other teams of the organization. So in this model, there are 4 teams working together to provide services and improvement to the district. Furthermore, coordination is having a staff member who oversees all performance improvement activities, or SNHD. And that's my position. It's a new position to the organization, and it's based on the standards that we have. That position has been given authority and responsibility to work with staff at all levels to uphold the standards for performance improvement, and to plan, implement, monitor, and report on efforts to embed PI into the agency. Establish those PI plans with goals for the agency, and my job is to be a big recruiter of expertise within the district to get those people aligned with the teams that we've been talking about so that we can lead the organization to these performance improvements. Establish or sustain PI teams to work on activities that will meet those performance improvement objectives, and have the teams report to leadership on a regular intervals with progress towards goals. So that's the assignment of a performance improvement coordinator. And I'd like to give you some of the objectives that I've been given as a coordinator. The recommendation from the accreditation consultant was to hire a full-time quality and performance improvement position, and I'm glad to say that through an internal promotion process that I was chosen for that position. Our sustain and develop plans or projects for all performance improvement components. One example would be to develop a performance management plan. This has been completed. It has been reviewed by leadership and approved, and we are actually going to have our first performance management team meeting this Thursday. We're moving in the right direction with performance management. Those members of that team are experts in our data collection and data resources of the district, and they will be able to help us to decipher what's good performance of an organization like our own. Another project example is establish quality improvement initiatives for health equity. That has been established, and the performance improvement team that's going to be heading that up will actually be meeting over the next few months to start looking at health equity throughout the district first, and then moving on to what does health equity look like in our community, and then marrying those two together. We also need to sustain, establish, or enhance PI teams, and there are four of them. That's the quality improvement team, which has been already established and has been operating for the last year. Performance management team, which will start this week. Workforce development team, which has met a couple times, but now we're getting it on a regular schedule. The CHAWCHIP and strategic plan, or CCS, which actually will be starting to meet this month. Those four teams will be working together to move our agency forward. And we'll integrate accreditation and health equity in all the performance improvement team activities. Another way to look at and measure how we're doing is, what is the PI component? Does it exist or is it new to the organization? Have we written the plan and has it been approved? Has the team been established? Are projects started? And what is the due date for our next phase? And as you can see, quality improvement is already well on the way. We have 7 quality improvement projects that we're currently monitoring for the organization. Those are broad efforts at improving different parts of the organization, such as our internal communication. That's one of our quality improvement projects. Workforce development exists and our projects are being started. We're looking at all of our training and how we can improve training, not only for these performance improvement projects, so training for quality improvement, training for performance management, but also training for the entire district. And so we have a much more coordinated and responsive training effort at the district. We have a new human resource administrator. I've met with her numerous times and we've been talking about how we can improve the training of the district, and that's going to be one of the major focuses of that particular team. The performance management team, which is responsible for collecting data, is going to be meeting this week. I'm very excited about that. There are two major types of data that they'll be looking at. One will be the internal data of the organization. How do we function as an organization? Things like what are our finances doing in comparison to other large health districts throughout the country? What kinds of fiscal activities can we do to improve that? Things that will help us on a long-term basis improve our efficiency and help us, as I said before, to develop things like internal communication, which betters the organization. And our CHAWCHIP and strategic plan, we are in process of writing a consolidated plan for all three of those activities and getting buy-in from the staff and the organization, launching our community health assessment, which last time was done in 2016 and is coming up for renewal. So setting up timelines and making sure that we meet those objectives. And with the CHAWCHIP and strategic plan, those are also very heavily involved with accreditation. That's domains 1, 4, and 5. So we, not only do we need to do it for the community, but we also need to do it for our accreditation process, and we need to have it all documented. I think that we'll have that plan written and approved by May, and we'll be moving forward on a community health assessment at that time. And that gives you an overview of the activities that we've been involved with. Appreciate your time and look forward to working with you closely as we continue to develop these component parts of a truly integrated performance improvement system. Do you have any questions that I can answer?
Thank you. I actually have two.
Yes.
My first question is, you referred to leadership, and these teams will report to leadership, and who is leadership?
Leadership is our executive team. It includes our directors, our chief health officer, and our key staff.
And so when these committees decide they're going to make some changes, how is that communication throughout the entire system? How do people know?
That's a great question. It involves making sure that the changes are first approved by leadership so that we have the buy-in of the key leaders of the organization, and that those improvements then are implemented, and through other activities that we have that are not listed on the performance improvement, such as our PIO, our public information office, getting the word out. And you'll notice that we're working on internal communication as one of those, so that we can get the word out to all staff through a variety of mechanisms.
Yeah. I have one question, James. The workforce development team, is that a new team that was put in place as a part of the accreditation process?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you kind of walk us through an example of how somebody at the service delivery level has integrated into that, let's say with environmental health or the nurse maternal health program or one of those programs? How does that look at the service delivery level?
That's a great question. I'm going to use a quality improvement project as a way to describe how this all could work for us as an organization. Let's see that we ask our staff through the quality circles that we've implemented in all of our divisions to provide us with suggestions for improvement. And one of the quality circles says that we need to do a better job with our waste management, that they've noticed that we waste a lot of time doing an intake. So in that situation, we would actually have the staff do some measurements of what those intake times are, and they would work on giving us data that would go to the quality improvement team. The quality improvement team would monitor that data and make suggestions for actions with input from the line staff. So the information not only flows up, but it flows down in that situation. And as a result of getting information about those intake times, someone comes up with a suggestion for a workflow process change. The workflow process is implemented in one small area in a department, and we find out that it does so well in that one department at improving our wait times that it's then moved on to other departments as well. That's the Plan Do Study Act in its iterations of we look at the problem, we get information from the line staff about how they see it, we make changes based on an action plan, we make the changes, then we review those changes to see whether or not they are successful and efficient. And when we find out that they did a good job, we implement them on a broader scale, but we also could be changing them slightly. This iterative process moves around over and over again so that we keep looking at what we're doing in a continual process. And so you'll hear the terminology continual quality improvement, or CQI.
So I do have another statement. This is just fair warning. I applaud you for wanting to do evidence-based best practices across the country and find what's best and bring it to the Nevada. But what I learned is that it's not the Nevada laws. You won't want to keep Ms. Bradley very involved. The Nevada laws are different, and I'll give you an example. Coming from Arkansas and Texas, I'm very used to hiring non-smokers. And so when we tried to go in that direction, we quickly learned that Nevada protects smokers. So there's some quirky little laws in Nevada that are a little different. So you want to keep, I'm going to say, Ms. Bradley's team very involved in major changes when you're bringing things into the state.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the information from that quality improvement project moves up to leadership through reporting upwards. We've been identifying champions for each of the project teams, and that helps to move that information where it needs to go. Other questions?
General comments? I have a general comment.
Go ahead.
Okay. Dr. Le Guin asked me if I would answer a quick question for you that you haven't asked me yet. What is a quality circle? And that's a great question. When we needed to have staff give us feedback as part of this process, we instituted line staff quality circles. Those are they're led by the line staff, they're run by the line staff, they are quality improvement activities at the front line of the organization. And those quality circles will provide us with information about suggestions and also action plans for ways that we can improve. The quality circles information moves to the quality improvement team for review, and so we get those suggestions on a regular basis. That QI team's meeting every 2 weeks, and we're looking at what the QC, the quality circles, are saying, and we're making changes based on those action plans. There's we've actually implemented two levels of change. One is called a just did it, and the other one is a full QI project. In a just did it, the line staff have the permission to move forward with their supervisor's approval to make changes. So they may say, we've got a small problem here with communication, but I think if we did X, Y, or Z, that communication problem would be overcome. And the supervisor says, absolutely. I've seen that happen already with two different departments that were not meeting together, and so the information was not flowing back and forth between the departments, and they started to meet on an ad hoc basis as necessary to discuss what the communication was between the two departments. And that was very successful. We wrote that up as a just did it, put it into our documentation, and that's one way in which a quality circle can have an impact with the organization.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I just did some general comments. I look around the room and I see when this was all started 5-6 years ago, there's only a couple in the room who were part of this. Just want to make a comment. I've moved from New Mexico to this side of the Grand Canyon 25 years ago. And at that time, we noticed in Clark County that we had silos of individuals and organizations, be they hospital, be they government, be they health district or whatever, that had within them people who wanted to try and improve the preventive health status and the general health status of people in this county. And this county we had some of the worst health indices in the United States, is to understate things. I'm not saying we've improved, but we've gotten rid of the silos, and this process has helped us get rid of the silos. Let me give you a couple of examples of how we've gotten rid of some of those silos and what this process has done. The health district, some people in the health district know it, but you people may not know that when you developed your community health, your CHA and your improvement plan, you brought in people from these various silos to put together what was going to be the topics, what was going to be the areas. It turns out you had picked the areas, or this community picked the areas, that if we do improvements, we will make the biggest gains, such as attacking obesity, which if we reduce the incidence of obesity in this county, we will reduce the incidence of heart disease and pulmonary disease and kidney disease. We've also done things related to nutrition and improving nutrition. And we had people at some of those CHIP meetings who were involved with nutrition and knew that we had hundreds of thousands of kids coming to school hungry. And we put that on the, or we, this process put that on the list. And people began to start talking to each other. Just to give you an idea of how far that has come, as recent as last week, Three Square, the food bank, held a meeting of its contracted facilitators who go out and make the home visits for seniors. And they, we have, I don't know if you guys know that, but we have approximately 50,000 seniors here who are hungry in this county. It's that's a conservative estimate. And there are many social determinants that each of these individuals need to overcome in order to be able to have adequate food. Well, that came up in our CHA discussions. That came up in the CHIP discussions starting back, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Well, that's just being translated. It's taken 2-3 years, but they've got the list. And they're having home visitors now. Where they're going to try and encourage the home visitors from Helping Hands to all of these other organizations to ask these questions when they do go in the home, the social workers and things like that, find out if they do have transportation to get to this grocery store. And if they don't, they now know, because of the RTC showed up at the CHIP programs, that the RTC happens to have programs that can get people, pick up people and get them to the grocery store. That's an example of what happened with this. That's just one example. We have a bunch of other examples relating to access to acute care hospitals. I could go on and on. You know, I've been around for 25 years. Just want you to know that this process, even though it's labor intensive within your organizations and you're preoccupied with the accreditation process of this quality improvement within your own organization, parts of that have had an impact on this community that at least we're beginning to start to get out of our silos and beginning to have work to try and improve the general health status of the population here. Just, I've talked too much, but I'm sorry. I just wanted you to know that it's beginning to happen. And it's part of it started here, 6-7 years ago.
Thank you, Dr. Osgood.
Go ahead. If I could just add to that, the CHIPS program, even though it's kind of still in its infancy, it's on the first responder level, it's been huge. In the past, we'd go in and people with these social service needs who would have nowhere to really turn to refer them to. Now, with a simple CHIPS referral, it's reducing repeat call volume for EMS, it's reducing repeat ER visits because we're able to get them access to that social services needs that they need. And it's, I think as that program grows, it's going to be huge for this valley.
And that started with this
last cycle.
It did. You know, the call lines and all of that.
Yep.
None of those would have happened had we not had the CHIP, in my view.
I agree.
Thank you, James. I agree. As you were giving your presentation, I was reflecting on all the changes that have taken place since we began this process, and I was like on the periphery of all of the process, and it's really good to see what has come to fruition, things that have developed out of that, and as Dr. Osgood so eloquently put it. And so we've begun a process, and it's been very fruitful to this community, and thank you for all your hard work, and that's everyone here in the Health District. You've taken on a humongous task, and you've bitten off little pieces at a time, and it's showing good results here in Southern Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you.
So item number three is on our agenda is to discuss and approve recommendations to the Southern Nevada Board of District Board of Health, April the 26th meeting. Do we have any items that we need to bring forward to that meeting?
I sent Dr. Isser a note because I understood that the October 1 shooting, that there were conflicts with the HIPAA, sharing HIPAA information with patients, and people couldn't locate people. And so I did not know really where that goes, and I honestly don't know if he sent that to another committee or something, but I really felt like it was something that the health board needed to discuss on a better communication system under those type of circumstances, and that what you can share and help people find and locate victims and families and things like that.
I'll follow Dr. Isser as status is.
May I make a comment about that? You brought up one of the biggest obstructions we've got in the health, as you know.
Right.
It's a federal law, as you know. And over the last several years, I participated in a forum of physicians and insurance people from around the country, and we identified the current HIPAA law as being implemented and as being written as one of the obstructions for obtaining access to health care. And the health district is trying, I know at their clinics, they're trying very hard to be able to, to do workarounds to the to some of the bureaucratic obstructions that have come from HIPAA. I would suggest that as an extension of what she said, is you might want to have as part of your going forward analysis, try and figure out the strengths and weaknesses of HIPAA at your clinics. The strengths or weakness of HIPAA in your abilities to be able to refer patients and things like that to both acute care and stuff like that. That might be a start, and the board may be helpful in directing you to say you should do it or you can do it on your own. But I think you guys could take it within your own jurisdictions and make a circle to try and figure out what the strengths and weaknesses are of HIPAA in the public health arena. We found it in the acute care arena. It may turn out that HIPAA, some of the research done by Johns Hopkins, by the CDC, it may turn out to be causing more deaths than it's preventing. Just to let you know.
Dr. Osgood, I'm not familiar with the reports that you're citing, but I am aware that HIPAA does provide certain exceptions. There is a public health exception. There are treatment payment operation exceptions. So I think some of the confusion that occurred with 1 October was an internal confusion with respect to what they could or could not do, not necessarily a barrier created by HIPAA itself.
Well, I suggest that all be analyzed.
Familia and Director of Clinical Services. I just want to add that the health district is also participating. This is we are just in the early stages of that, of participating of the health information exchange. As you know, that's a kind of community-wide information source in terms of patients' data. We just last week initiated the training of our staff for that purpose, and it's something that we are about to implement here that will facilitate the exchange of patient information with participating institutions. As you may know, not everybody in the community participates in the health information exchange. That's one of the federal government initiative with when they started the electronic health records across the nation, and initially that was also, I mean, that is part of the incentive of that program initially. Now there are regional entities that facilitate that that process, so we are now actively engaged on initiating that here, and once the system is implemented, we will be able to share patient information with other entities. But one of the issues that they have, going back to your comment about the emergency rooms, that we see with providers, and this is not just here, it's across the country, is that there are many providers who do not properly understand HIPAA. For example, disease outbreak investigations. The public health system is exempt from HIPAA. Now, sometimes when we approach providers out there and ask them for information on some patients that are affected by any of those communicable diseases that we're investigating, we notice initial resistance on sharing that information because somebody will mention HIPAA. But we are exempt, so we don't need any approval from the patient in terms of gathering that information. So, in other words, there are still a lot of, I would say, providers and institutions that don't completely understand HIPAA, and I know the interpretation could vary from institution to institution, but it is something that, in terms of the patient care, we are looking to that through the information exchange system, and this, the other piece is, you know, how the local institutions start educating their providers about HIPAA so everybody understands properly what it means.
I have a comment, and because I work in the acute care area, and we've implemented the electronic health record, information flows more freely than it ever has, and it's always been the fact of healthcare that you have to share information between entities. And it's become easier. You brought up a point that I hadn't really considered, that the criminal enterprises are tapping into those systems and using that information. And before you go on, Dr. Osgood, Tina, can you just verbalize your concern with what happened?
Well, I just know that people could not locate where, for instance, mm-hmm. I had a sister facility and one of their employees had been shot in the eye. Okay. And they could not locate her and find that. Now, behind the scenes, I was able to find the patient. But I'm just saying, I felt like internally there was a conflict in the how HIPAA was being taken care of.
Got it.
Go ahead, Doctor. I was just going to say, in my previous life, in the 1980s, I happened to have been at the Circle when HIPAA was created. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you an opinion. We are living with the legacy of something that was created inappropriately or expanded inappropriately. The original HIPAA was the AMA, president of the AMA, that wanted HIPAA because our patient information was being shared inappropriately by just one small sector of the health industry. It happened to be research institutes and people who were doing research on medical research. That was the only place in the country, in the entire industry, where there was inappropriate use of personal data. Out of that, over 30 years, we've now got it, that particular law superimposed on all the rest of the health industry that never had a documented issue with breach of confidential information. We're living with it. And so we're starting probably in the 90s. Everybody in the health industry began to try and figure out workarounds. So we're not talking about anything new, as you guys know. All I'm suggesting is that you put on the table how we can do a workaround, because I'd be very surprised if there's going to be any national legislative changes in the HIPAA law. I think it's more us figuring out to properly be able to exchange information with protecting patients' confidentiality in the health district and everybody else. That's my suggestion. But it was an interesting story. I'd be happy to share what I remember of it. But it was an interesting story because the person who testified in Congress came to New Mexico and talked at our, I was president of the New Mexico chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and on the National Committee on Child Health Finance. I chaired that committee at that time for the American Academy of Pediatrics. And that lady from the AMA came who testified and went through the data of how she could find her information, but it was only at the Research Institute at Penn and at Yale and at Harvard. Be happy to share it with you, but we have to live with it. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. This is very interesting. Information sharing in the healthcare industry evolves, and I think we're going to have some and very unique circumstances like the 1 October incident. We probably need to look at ways that we can share information more efficiently. But again, as a health district, you are exempt from a lot of those things that I see in my area of healthcare. So next on the agenda is the health officer and staff reports.
No, there is nothing. Not today.
Okay. We'll come back next time. Okay, so now we've come to our second period of public comment. Anyone wishing to comment, limiting their public comment to 5 minutes? Is there anyone? Okay, so I'm just curious, do any of the advisory board members attend the regular Board of Health meetings?
Not on regular, no.
But you have gone?
I've been, but I don't attend regular either.
I've been thinking that it would be a good idea if one or more of us just attend that meeting on a regular basis, just so we could touch base with the board and have a feeling for what input we can give them in terms of our position as an advisory board. And I'm not going to be able to attend this month. But I tend to go to more of those meetings so I can be more in touch with what's going on. If there is no public comment and no one else has any suggestions at this time.
I have just a question. Okay. Does anybody
Does anybody represent the advisory board at the regular health board meetings? Is anybody there that represents us to or anything?
If there are recommendations, Dr. Iser will bring forth the recommendations.
Oh, he doesn't. He takes.
Other than that,
no.
No.
Thank you.
Just to observe the process and also to see the areas of concern that they have, but that everyone on this board was put in place because they represent a municipality or they. Or an industry. So if you, at some point as an advisory board, you know, we should express concerns from our municipality or from our industry to help to be a part of the process of improving public health here in Southern Nevada, you know. And with that being said, if who what municipalities are represented here?
I'm North Las Vegas.
City of Henderson.
Mesquite.
Las Vegas. And Boulder City.
Boulder City, okay. And one final thing. So applications are need to be turned in for what positions, Michelle?
The position, environmental health, and what's the other?
Maybe it.
There was three.
Is it the nurse?
A nurse?
The nurse, you. Nurse. Yes.
Well, that, when I got the email, it was not in, nurse was not in the email.
I don't think I put any of the positions in the email, did I?
Yeah, there was three. There were three. I'll show it to you after.
Okay.
Okay.
I think on the email that came out, there may have been an error that kind of relisted the positions that are listed with the District Board of Health as opposed to which the Advisory Board of Health.
Mm.
Oh.
I had, think I mentioned that to Michelle.
Yeah, we looked on the website, and the website is correct.
So the positions are different between the District Board of Health and the Advisory Board. So I think the memo that came out to our Advisory Board, although I think it went to everybody, did not clarify what the Advisory Board positions would be.
For well, instance, we sent the link. Maybe you clicked on the wrong link on the...
Well, I have it here.
Go ahead.
And one representative who's a physician, one representative of non-gaming, and one representative of Association of Gaming Establishments. At large applications for a public health advisory board recruitment will be accepted for the following positions. And what I just read off previously, that is what's underneath that.
So it's just those three things, those three positions that were mentioned in there.
Yes.
And those are district board positions, okay, not advisory board positions.
Okay.
We'll take a look at that and send something out that's clarifying.
Okay.
The information that's been posted in the newspaper and other public areas seems to be accurate.
But the website itself.
But the email that...
The email that email that we received.
Okay.
The link is correct. That's what we checked.
Okay. It was the email that seemed to be...
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no further items to discuss, does anyone have a motion to adjourn?
No move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, so we are adjourned.
Before you bang that gavel,
okay.
Let's address the next meeting and make sure everybody can attend. And
July 9th.
July 9th, okay.
I can't see that far in the future.
It should be on your calendar.
Okay, I know I have the calendar. Okay.